We're talking about words here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Words can hold immense weight and emotion, sure. And at other times, they're just fun to say. This year, fabulosity made it into the dictionary. It means a fabulous quality, state, or nature. Obvious? Yep. And it's still so entertaining. Do you have a favorite word, old or new? We'll take them. Maybe you heard it from your grandparents or you picked it up in school. Share it with us at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is here to talk about fun words, not so much the new ones, but really those that have fallen out of our conversations. Joe Gillard is an advocate for resurrecting artifacts of our language. He's the author of The Little Book of Lost Words. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You know, there are a lot of words that used to be popular that we don't use anymore. They don't have to be hundreds of years old, even just a decade ago. How did you figure out which words to put in your little book?
Well, like you said, even a decade ago, there were words we were using that we don't anymore. I would think most of those would be slang. But I wanted to look a little bit farther back. So I looked at, old Victorian slang dictionaries or very old book sources or sources online where words that they used centuries or even thousands of years ago that were very interesting to use and had useful, relatable definitions. And those are the ones that I put in the book.
You know, you're a history buff by profession, but I just have to pause and say something exists that is an old Victorian slang dictionary. That's a thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, back then, you know, people were obsessed with language, just like a lot of us are now. And so, you had people collecting and compiling words they heard on the street just simply because they were fascinated by it.
Interesting. So I'm at full disclosure, I'm going to mispronounce at least half of these as we go throughout this half hour. And I want to put that out there and have an understanding that that's how this is going to go. As we take a look at some of these words, first, we have to talk about snollygoster.
Of course.
It's a weird word, got a weirder origin. What does snollygoster mean?
That one comes from the 19th century, actually. It's an American slang word. It's a word that means a dishonest or corrupt or a bad, unprincipled, usually politician, snollygoster. And they said that because back then the term was actually snallygaster, a little bit different pronunciation, that was an American mythological creature that was known to eat small animals and children. And so eventually, the word kind of morphed into this other meaning that people used in a more general sense to describe a person, usually a politician, that they found to be very, very dishonest or corrupt.
So there's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek there with the way that people figured out how they could create this new word.
Definitely.
And where did you find people using snollygoster?
Well, you can. It was probably mostly written in local newspapers, things like that, or said on the street, and a lot of these old words are sometimes hard to find in written sources because most words and most language that was happening was spoken, and dictionaries really only came around, in full force. Much later than a lot of people think. So a lot of words that people were using, we may not have written sources for, or we may have very few, but we still know that they were being used.
Okay, so then moving on from snollygoster, what about mumpsimus? What on earth?
So a mumpsimus, that's a stubborn person who refuses to change their mind, even when somebody's telling them that they're wrong. So we've probably known a few of people like this in our life, but it comes mumpsimus comes from the 16th century, and there's a story about a priest who was giving a prayer, and it was in Latin, and one of the Latin phrases was quod Ore Sumpsimus or something like that. But he said Mumpsimus instead of Sumpsimus. And he was actually corrected by a student who said that's incorrect. It's Mumpsimus. But being a, you know, an authority figure who didn't want to perhaps be embarrassed, he kept saying Mumpsimus. And therefore that word crept out into the public again to mean anybody who does not who doesn't change their mind despite being proven wrong.
And how hard is it for you to not draw parallels from all of these words that are centuries old to like every single day of encountering people today?
It's nearly impossible to find a word that you can't use in a modern context.
Joe Gillard is the author of The Little Book of Lost Words, and we're talking about some of those lost words, and we're also taking your calls. What's your favorite thing about the English language? Do you love a specific word or phrase? Old, new, we'll take them. Maybe you've seen the word that you like change over time. Maybe that drives you crazy. Let's talk about what you see at 800-642-1234. Another thing about your book, Joe, is that you put the words into context to help us understand them. But I noticed one of the sentences you write to show us how to use one word includes pizza bagels. Modern cuisine, old word. Why are you meshing these two together?
I think that's just one of the things that a lot of people found entertaining when we were doing the concept of the book. Because like I said, these words can be used today. Not all of them need to be brought back, but certainly some of them we could use today. And when you put it into a modern context in the example sentence, you kind of show how you could use it nowadays. And also, it's just kind of silly and fun.
Right. The fun aspect of it certainly comes out for sure. And let's dig into the definition of the word pingle. I just feel like I this is one that calls to me. I should use it in a sentence. Help us understand pingle.
Pingle, yeah. So that's from the 19th century again, and that one is to work in a useless, unhelpful way that really just interferes. And so, you know, we think back to the 19th century, and we think everybody was just working hard all the time, you know, 14 hours a day on the farm. But we had people pingling then, just like we have people pingling today. And, you know, maybe a boss who just is trying to help and is making it more difficult for its workers. But it's a incredibly useful word, pingle.
Oh, I think a lot of people listening today will be able to apply that in their life. And I love that you've made it a gerund, that it's pingling, too, that we can use these. We need to use these words in all of their forms to really get at it. There are others that kind of seem a little more obvious. They sound like what they mean. One of those is snuggery.
Yeah, snuggery. Isn't that great? So, like I said, I don't advocate for all of these being brought back, but here's an example of one you can bring back, right? So a snuggery is a small, cozy, snug place. Like you said, it's just like it sounds. So you take your book and curl up in your snuggery and something we just don't say anymore but easily could.
And, you know, you're talking to Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a relatively famous connection to alcohol, for good or bad. Another word that you talk about in here is quaff-tied. That seems to relate pretty easily to our folks here.
Definitely. All the way back to the 16th century, quaff-tied. That's the time for drinking alcohol. So maybe 5 o'clock is the quaff-tied in our modern workday.
And did you see people, where would you see people using that? Is this something that people would just say in reference, or is this a more eloquent term for it? How do we understand, you know, the ways people used words like quaff-tied?
Right. And I don't know exactly how people would have used it and on their everyday, but we do know that words like quaff-tied were there's a good chance that they were literary words that would be written into a story or an article, but we would know what it means based off its roots or the way it sounds. But quaff-tied was most certainly much more common in the 15th century than it would be today. And drinking terminology, of course, was a huge part of history. I think Benjamin Franklin had a list himself of just something like 200 words he compiled for being drunk.
Wow. Let's go ahead and welcome a caller now. Carol from Madison. What word do you want to ring up today?
Hi. I watch a show on the History Channel called The Quest for Oak Island, where they're digging for this treasure, possibly deposited there hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And they use this one gentleman who's a metal detector of sorts, is from Australia or New Zealand, has quite a bit of an accent, and he calls really precious finds body dazzlers. And I'm not sure if he's putting together two words or if it's something, I don't know where body comes from. Dazzler, I can imagine it's something sparkly, but
interesting.
Curious if you have any idea on that.
Yeah, have you heard of this?
I have not heard of that word. That's a great word. I have a similar one I've found. Body dazzlers, that one I don't know.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like, go ahead.
I think it's Bobby, like B-O-B-I or B-O-B-B-I.
Oh, sure.
That's what I'm...
Great. And it looks like our production team has helped us out a little bit. A British noun, anything outstanding, striking, or showy. So
there you go.
That seems like one, even if it is in modern day language across the pond, that's something that we might be able to work in along with some of the other words that we've got for sure. Let's hit one more here. Just really quick. Let's talk about bladderoon.
Bladderoon. Yeah, so a bladderoon, of course, that's a person who just can't stop talking or boasting from the 18th century. So definitely a person we encounter probably often in our life, just like we did back then.
And that seems like another one where it really gives you a sense of the meaning of the word when you say it. You can't help but pronounce it bladderoon.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Joe Gillard stays with us. He's our guide as we talk about words that used to be common in the English language, but are pretty obscure today. Have you heard of any of these words before? What would you do if someone used one while talking to you? Would you ask them about it? Would you just pretend that you knew what they were talking about? Maybe you'd laugh. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. We continue the conversation ahead on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about words that we've stopped using or maybe don't even know in the first place. Our guest is making the case that we can incorporate some forgotten verbiage into everyday conversation, even if it's just for laughs. And you can be part of this discussion. Are you a fan of specific words? Do you think there's a reason we let some pieces of our language go? Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Joe Gillard put together the Little Book of Lost Words. We'll get right back to him in just a moment. First, let's take Peter from Pewaukee. Peter, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, thank you. So I'm almost 60, and a word that when I was younger had a very specific definition. The word is decimated. I believe it goes back to Roman legion times. It means to reduce by 10%, but I've noticed that a lot of broadcasters and people on the news will take and say decimated to mean a whole area has been wiped out by fire or hurricane or natural disaster or whatever. And it always kind of makes me chuckle a little bit because it's when I think about the actual definition originally.
Yeah, Peter, thanks for that. Joe, Peter's identifying, you know, one example of a word that has changed in the way that we use it. It started out as one thing and now we kind of use it in a different way. Do you see that often?
Oh, very, very often. Almost every single word that we use, you know, is gone through some kind of shift. Decimate, that's a fantastic example that, you know, if you want to use correctly, would mean reduced by 10% based on Roman history, like he said, when they would choose 10 soldiers to kill. And but it shows how we because these words change, there's really no reason to stick to these definitions, and there is no right or wrong because we can't see it happening in real time. In 100 or 200 years, we will absolutely see the definitions of words changing.
Ooh, you might be picking a fight there, telling our audience that there is no right or wrong to language. That that might be a third rail here, Joe.
It usually is.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Welcome, Wendy, in Fort Atkinson. What word do you want to talk about today?
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
All right. I'm sorry. My cell phone was a little iffy.
It happens.
The word that I was very surprised about is the word daft, D-A-F-T. And I realize it's not all that old, but recently in a conversation, I used the word to describe kind of a silly person, a silly idea. And the person just looked at me and all of a sudden they said, "Where are you from anyway?" As if they had never heard this word before. And maybe I'm dating myself, but it just struck me as very funny that she thought I was from out of the area just because I used this word. So that's my thought for the day.
Wendy, thank you so much for that. Joe, not only do we span different centuries when it comes to some of the words that we use, but also geographies, locations, a huge difference in dialect there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Daft, I believe, is much more common over in the UK and probably might see drop out in 50 years from now. I believe, you know, we have Daft Punk, the very popular band here.
Sure.
That's probably helped keep it alive. But after that, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see that one disappear completely and then be resurrected by someone like me.
Yeah, another book in another 100 or so years. That makes some sense. You know, we do wonder if that's something that might go out of vogue or many of the words in your book people just have never even heard of. Are there some words that we've been using for thousands of years and will probably keep using, things that won't go out of style like that?
Yeah, definitely. Words where there's no synonym for and there's no other way to interpret it, those words tend to stick around for the most part. So if we don't have another way to describe something or express something, there's a good chance that word is not going to change.
Interesting. Joe Gillard is the author of The Little Book of Lost Words, and there's still time for your call at 800-642-1234. What word have we talked about already that you've just heard from Joe's book that maybe you'll try to use in real life? Go ahead and give us a call or email ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Welcome, Mark in Ashland. Mark, what word do you want to talk about?
Okay, this is a mystery word that my dad, Second World War vet, I think he might have bought it back from Europe. I'm not sure, but if anybody else has ever heard of this word, fluorouracein glass.
I'm not familiar with that one at all. And you said he used it. How would he have used it in a sentence?
As something unexplained or a mystery.
Oh, interesting.
Something that would leave you scratching your head.
Thanks, Mark. Joe, did you come across that in any of your materials?
No, that's fascinating, though. And I love hearing about these ones that I've never heard because it's so fascinating to think that people were saying that and that other people, their peers, could understand them, but maybe not outside that circle or outside that time. And I'd love to learn more about that one.
Yeah, that's for the next edition. That sounds
definitely
great. And let's also talk to Kat from Oak Creek. Kat, I understand you have a favorite word.
I do. And I don't know if it's dark, but it cracks me up. That my favorite word is defenestrate, because at some point somebody decided to put, like, they needed a word to define to throw someone out a window.
As we all do.
The fact that
right.
Right. The fact that that's actually a word cracks me up.
Dark humor works here. This is public radio. Kat, thank you for sharing that. Joe, Kat gets to this really great point that, like, some words are just fun. You might not need to use them in everyday conversation or have a way to put them there, but they just keep us entertained.
That's absolutely right. Defenestration, also a similar word as gardiloo, which is what they used to yell when they throw waste out the window. And you could say it now to throw before you're going to throw anything, right? Just shout gardiloo, and it doesn't have to be wastewater anymore.
Oh, well, that's good to know. See, another definition of a word, adjusting for the times. Joe, have you, now that you've compiled all of these, have you tried to use these in normal conversation with anybody?
every once in a while, sure, because some of them lend themselves to that more than others. I try not to too much if I have to explain myself, but certainly, or I should say verily, a word like verily you can use in a conversation, and someone will probably know what you mean, but will might look at you funny, right? Because that means certainly or truly. And of course, if you're going to a Renaissance fair or something like that, these words will absolutely come in handy.
Right. Well, I mean, that's helpful. That's good to know. We can take a little cheat sheet along with it. We actually talked about in one of our promos ahead of this show the word slug-a-bed. So we would be, you know, we would regret to not mention what that means. What is slug-a-bed?
Oh, a slug-a-bed. That's somebody like me. It's a person who sleeps in past the appropriate time, right? It comes from Romeo and Juliet, I believe. It was first used by Shakespeare, and probably used often since that play, and then dropped out.
Joe, we have to fit in one more comment because it's one that is mentioned in your book. Catherine sent us an email saying she loves the word "grok." She uses it when she's talking about someone staring silently at her when they eat. She said she liked to describe her toddler when she tried to enjoy her secret mom snacks. Tell us more about grok.
Grok, yeah, that's one of my favorites too. 19th century, and that comes from Scottish dialect. Like you said, to stare at someone who's eating, hoping they'll give you food. Our dogs do this, our cats do this, and certainly sometimes our friends do this to us also.
Yes, small children too. That is for sure. One quick last question for you. What's your goal in putting these words in front of people? What do you hope happens?
Well, for one, I hope that people see that we've always been the way what we are, and that our ancestors were not that different from us. I really want people to take away that the reason these definitions make us laugh sometimes is because people were having as much fun back then as they are now. And we think of these old times as being dark, but really we have people who were the same as us and found the same things funny and had the same bad habits that we do today.
Joe, it's been a joy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Keely.
Joe Gillard is the author of The Little Book of Lost Words, Collywobbles, Snollygosters, and 86 other surprisingly useful terms worth resurrecting. He's also the founder of the website History Hustle. Just ahead, a forensic nurse joins us to share how new legislation would impact her work. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.